Hello, welcome back. This is Taylor Darcy coming to you after last episode talking about your goals as an entrepreneur, or rather keeping the end in mind. What's your purpose? Why are you starting a business? What is your goal? Is it to have a disposable income, or is it to have flexibility? What's your goal? We're going to talk about getting to your goal, or rather the mistakes that you will inevitably face as you are working towards your goal. What do I mean by that? We're all human. That's just the reality of it. And you're going to make mistakes. And so one of the mantras that I adopt is be firm in your goals, but flexible in how you get there. Now, for most business owners, it's actually pretty simple. The greatest strength of any small business, and I've said this repeatedly, is your ability to pivot. If something is working, then obviously you want to keep doing it. But if something is not working, and you'll know what I'm talking about here, if something is not working, the last thing you want to do is keep putting time and money into something just because you want it to work. Now, the problem comes from not knowing when those two times are. The wisdom of knowing when to quit or when to keep trying because it might work out. That is what you need to focus on. That is the point of that, of looking at that. Because once you start evaluating it, and the best metrics I can tell you, is there an ROI of return on investment on what you're doing? Is there value to it? Or have you just been putting good money after bad and it not working and you're getting nowhere? That, it's usually pretty apparent that something is not working. It's not too much that when you are looking at what you're investing your time and money into, that you're going to be, oh man, it's usually your ego. It's usually your ego that's keeping you doing something. It's not usually the money. Like your time, you might love it, but if you're not making money off of it, why are you doing it from an entrepreneurial standpoint? Then it should be a hobby. If it's a hobby, that's different. But if you're trying to make money off of it, then that should be your goal. And so when I was saying earlier about your ability to pivot, what do I mean? Stop doing what's not working and try something different. Why is that your greatest strength as an entrepreneur? Because big companies, they have more resources, but their ability to pivot is significantly lower. Think of the Titanic. Think of big, huge airplanes. It takes a lot of space for those to turn around or to change course. It takes a lot of people moving different pieces and parts. And that's what happens with these large companies. Think Apple, think Microsoft, think Google. And because there's so many people with egos involved and so many people with, oh, but I want to do this and I want to do that. And so they can't move very fast, not with the speed at which you as an entrepreneur, as a solo entrepreneur, or you and your partner. So what do I mean by that? What should that mean for your decision-making process? It's pretty simple. If changing something, you'll know faster if it doesn't work than someone that is trying to run a huge business, because it won't take so long to implement it. If you can change your business name, right? If you find that your business name isn't striking the chord that you're hoping it would, don't stop. Don't go out of business. Change your name. It's hard. It's a little challenging, but it can be done. There's nothing that says that you have to stay with what's doing because your business name doesn't work. Think of, for instance, when they named the Chevy Nova, which in Spanish, if I'm not mistaken, and if anybody's listening to this, I apologize in advance if I'm wrong, but Nova means no go. Imagine naming a car Nova. That means no go. Now, in Mexico, the sales, from what I've read and heard, is that the Chevy Nova was dead in the water. But they didn't realize that. For instance, when I was working at a credit union, they opened a branch via freeway. It was 5 miles difference because of the way that the freeway had curved and angled. But when you drove it branch to branch, which apparently they didn't, it was only 1.5 miles. That was a pretty decent sized mistake. and they tried to make it work and it just never did. And the branch ended up closing because of it. Because within a week of the new branch open, everybody thought we were out of business. They'd come in because there were no cars in the parking lot because it was so slow. People thought we were closed. And so they just kept going to the other branch. And they made a mistake. And rather than make better choices, they just doubled down and said, let's just make that the main branch. Even though we'd been there 20, 30 years, the branch that I worked at. What I'm getting at here is that when you're starting a business, use these opportunities to your benefit. Use the ability to, your overhead is low, right? Imagine what it takes to run Apple or what it takes to run Google. If you start your business, your overhead can be fairly minimal. Think website, think email address, think real simple marketing, even social media marketing, which can be crazy effective and for very low money, right? You can spend either nothing, just telling people about what you do on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and that type of thing. And it doesn't have to be an expensive process. It used to be when my parents owned their business, the only way to get your word out was either mixers and business cards, or you had to go to like chamber meetings. Or for instance, my dad used to pass out flyers on people's doors. And that was a marketing technique. But the problem was is that who knew if they needed their carpets cleaned, who knew if they even had carpets. You can narrow your focus down so much with Google ads, Facebook ads, that you can really establish this relationship that will help you get the clients and customers that you're looking for. You can build a $1 million business through Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all of these different resources and not spending a dime on advertising. That's pretty amazing. And now Google ads, obviously there's money, and Facebook ads, there's money to be spent. But my point is they're very targeted. They're not like they used to be, like when my father would throw out flyers. You never really knew who was going to get what. You never knew what they were going to spend, who was going to respond. So you could get 1,000 flyers printed for pretty cheap. It was a couple cents, right? Maybe a penny a page, and then spend your afternoon walking around a neighborhood, and you might get maybe one job. But you then had to earn the money, right? So you spend several hours earning that money, or several hours getting it, and your actual cost per hour, if you get paid $200 for a job and you spent 8 hours pushing out flyers and then another hour and a half to make it, then your actual cost per job, you got to divide that $200 by that 9 hours. And you know, now versus you can pay Google, you can start at a fairly low price, 10 cents, $2, $1, $15, $20, a lead. And you follow up with them and imagine spending $20 and it taking you 10 minutes to get $200. So you've just 10x'd your income, right? And that's huge. You multiply that by 1,000 and you've got some serious cash coming in. And so that's kind of my point is, like, for instance, with Google ads, if you're spending money on Google ads, great, but make sure you're getting a positive ROI on it. Don't keep spending money if it's not working. Like for instance, in my business, I advertised on Facebook and I saw little to no ROI on it. And I let it go and I let it go. And I thought, well, let's just keep going. Let's see if I can earn one client. That's all the logic I get. One client will get me what I need. The problem is that I'm spending money that is not getting me money. Versus on Google, if you're advertising on Google, it's people are actively searching for what you're looking for. And you have that opportunity to push them to a landing page or a website. So now that we've talked a little bit about pivoting and making good choices, let's talk about your mistakes. And you're going to make plenty of them. Let's just get over it. And I don't mean to be mean or harsh, but making mistakes is, number one, part of being human, but part of life, but also, more importantly, it's part of being an entrepreneur. If you make a mistake, the worst thing you can do is stop. And what I mean by that, yes, obviously stop making a mistake, but more specifically, to stop doing what you're doing. Just because you made a mistake, dust yourself off, get back up, and keep trying, and keep moving, and keep pivoting. There are so many success stories would never have been success stories if the person would have stopped too soon. And so you really need to focus on building the strength. Previous episode, we talked about what happened when my apartment flooded. I'm sitting there underneath the sink trying to get the water to turn off, and it was everything in me to get in there because of the water and the spray. That wasn't a mistake I did. It wasn't anything. But that's how you have to be when you're an entrepreneur. You have to sit there and you have to stuff that is not fun, is not enjoyable. I'll give you a great, for instance. I have an opposing counsel on a matter I'm working on right now who is an absolute nightmare. This guy is unprofessional as they come. He threatens sanctions. He threatens going to the DA for perjury charges. He is absolutely the worst opposing counsel that I've dealt with. And I'm not looking for sympathy here. I'm simply saying that in your business, you are going to have to learn to deal with people like that. How you deal with them. Are you going to sink to their level? Are you going to stoop to their level? Are you going to make better choices? It's everything in me not to treat him like the two-year-old that he's acting like. That's what you want to do. That's what you're, that's that thing inside of you that says, I want to give as good as I get. But I learned long ago that, and it's not necessarily taking the high road, it's about playing the long game. I had a client one time where, I'm not even kidding you, I spoke to opposing counsel and he was absolutely belligerent to me, just yelling at me, cussing me out. And I hadn't even met this person. I'd never known him from anybody. I had no idea who this guy was. And I was like, hey, let's calm down. We're two professionals. And he said, I can't take it out on your clients, so I'm taking it out on you. And so attorneys get a bad rap because of stuff like that. And that's unfortunate too, because not all attorneys are like that. Then you get the attorneys that are making choices, that are delaying things, that are unnecessarily hurting your case, or that are unnecessarily hurting their own case just because they want to stick it to you for no good reason. As business owners, you need to have a plan to deal with those types of people. Because if you, for instance, and the guy that was telling me, I can't take it out on your client, so I'm taking it out on you, I took the high road and I wanted to lash back and yell at him and do what, you know, is the natural thing to do. But I realized by keeping my cool that I would get a better deal for my clients. And so I sat there and I took it. And then I went back to him and I talked with my clients about everything that was going on. And it's true. I ended up getting a great deal for my clients because I didn't retort. I didn't fight back. And so sometimes you have to do that. I'm not saying to be a pushover. Don't misinterpret my words. I'm saying be strategic, right? Be strategic in your thinking. Be strategic in how you react to the inevitable. The inevitables are you're going to have things come up. You're going to have suppliers if you're buying and selling things that aren't going to play nice. You're going to have people that want to put weird things in contracts. I see that all the time. I have clients that I can't believe someone's trying to put something in a contract. And it's good that I'm reviewing it, because otherwise they would be getting screwed. And I have to bring it back to this. My parents' business would have been significantly more had they've had someone like me. That's why I do what I do, because nobody reviewed their contract. They didn't know that they shouldn't have put something in there, or that they should have put something in there. It wasn't their fault. They weren't attorneys. That wasn't their goal. That wasn't their objective. And so by having someone, and I'm not saying me, I'm just saying in general, having someone on your side that can advocate for you and help you see those potential errors coming your way. I would have counseled my clients completely differently. I would have said, it's not worth signing that contract. And I've said that before, and my clients are free to listen or not listen. And I've had that happen where they choose to listen to me, and that's perfectly fine, but at least they know the consequences. And in one instance that happened, I had a client that was pre-COVID-19, signed a lease with a personal guarantee. For those of you who don't know what that means, it means that if you own a business entity such as a corporation or an LLC when you're especially new, a lot of landlords especially will ask you to personally guarantee. And what that does is it goes around the liability shield that we set up for you to make it so that you're personally liable for that contract. And I told him that you shouldn't sign that. And he said, what's the perfect place? It's the perfect business. And not more than 2 weeks later, COVID-19 hit. Now talk about bad timing. And now he's struggling immensely to get to work on his business. And that's a terrible place to be in. Knew what he was doing. I advised him differently and he made the choice. And all he has to do, I never say I told you so, because that's unhelpful, right? Then nobody ever is benefited by saying that. So you're going to make mistakes. How do you address those mistakes? Do you take responsibility for them? Do you complain? Do you give up just because it gets difficult? Or do you take a moment, take a deep breath, and then get back at it? Do you have someone that hurts you? Do you sue them back, or do you move on with your life? Now, I'm not trying to counsel you on what to do, because I'm not in your shoes, but I'm saying be strategic. There are people like Martha Stewart, for instance. You don't mess with her intellectual property. She will sue you and she has no issue with it. And it doesn't matter what you did. There are some people out there that will just sue no matter what because they don't want to ever be perceived as weak. And so they come off as being difficult. And every business has to find their groove. Some people will not enforce a contract to save their life. And that's their choice. But be strategic. Make your plans outside of the moment, right? Don't make plans when someone makes a bad choice that hurts you, because then you're reacting instead of acting. So when you sit down and you're developing your goals, the key there is to be flexible in that approach. And I talked about that earlier. Be flexible on how you get there, right? Set your long-term goals. What do you want to make in a year? What do you need to make in a year? There's what you need and what you want. And then go get it. A lot of people are afraid and they make decisions based on fear, right? If you have a strategy, you don't have to make a decision based on fear anymore. You're making a decision based on your plan, right? And so emotion no longer has the same effect on you. And I'll give you a great, for instance, when I'm part of a group of people called LITA, or Live Every Day August, and it's for going live streaming. And a lot of people are afraid of being on camera. A lot of people are afraid that people are going to hurt them or misjudge them. Or let's take a more relevant, issue. Let's talk about podcasting, right? I'm starting a podcast. This is my second episode. There's a lot of people that let fear dictate what they do. There was a saying, I can't remember the specific, but fear has killed more dreams than anything else. So the opposite of fear is action. An acronym for fear is false evidence appearing real. I want you to think about that for just a second. False evidence appearing real. That's pretty interesting, right? Because we all have fears. That's just the reality we live in. Some people are afraid of heights. I would guarantee that most of you listening are afraid of failure. So what's the solution? Fail faster. Try it. If it doesn't work, move on. Keep trying something else. Don't be afraid of failure. Because when you're afraid of failure, you lose out on a lot of opportunities. You lose out opportunities for success. What do I mean by that? There's a lot of conservative approaches out there to business. There's a lot of risky approaches out there to business. And the magic, and I'm not suggesting you mortgage your house to start your business. I'm not saying don't. I'm just saying be comfortable with risk. You need to be comfortable with some risk in your life. I'm not talking bungee jumping or skydiving risk. I'm talking about having faith in yourself, having faith in your product, having faith in your ability to succeed. Don't get lost in the weeds, right? Don't let that false evidence that's hurting you appear real. Take a step back and answer, is what you're enduring fear or fact? Which is why I was saying earlier about using metrics, return on investment, to make your decisions, not based on your ego. There's a lot of people out there that they want to run their own business for ego. They want to put a title behind their name. And I'll tell you, most people don't care about titles. It's just not it. Most people care about how you treat them. Most people care about the product that you deliver, the substance. That's what people care about. They don't care that you look 90 when you are 50. They don't care that you're not the most beautiful person in the world. They care that you do a good job, that your product solves a problem. I solve a problem for my clients. I don't. And I do it in a way that lets them know that problems can be solved. Now, I can't solve every problem, but I do my best to solve every problem my client has, within the confines of the law and within the confines of decisions. So when you're looking at your goals, if you identify your client's problems and you're working on solving them, then I can guarantee you there will be very little risk and you will meet your goals. And that's very important, because when you are making these choices as a business owner, if you get too stuck in something, your failure comes. Think Blockbuster. They passed on Netflix. Talk about kicking themselves now. Not even kidding you. They passed on Netflix because they made a choice that they thought that people liked coming to the store. Now, they've been out of business or will be out of business for years because of the online market or just buying things instead of renting them. But think about what would have happened if they'd have been in business during COVID-19. How would they stay in business? They wouldn't. That's just the reality. They can't. You can't stay in business doing that, right? Because they need that physical product. Netflix is booming. Think Disney Plus. Disney released Disney Plus right before the pandemic started. And then they started releasing films that had just been out. And I guarantee you that they started making bank over that. They had to close Disneyland, Disney World, all that stuff. But they started making bank because they made a good strategic choice, right? They didn't make it based on emotion. They made it based on current reality. There's so many people, like for instance, right now during COVID-19, people would think I'm crazy, but I promise you that now is a great time to start a business. And we talked about that in my previous episode. The barrier to entry is low right now because you have more time. All the time that you save from going to your normal job, or all the time that you save from having to waste time in meetings that you shouldn't have even been wasting time in meetings in the first place. So you've got this situation where you've got an opportunity here. I'm not saying the pandemic is an opportunity. I'm saying what you do in the context of the pandemic is your opportunity. Why? Because you know how you now have choices that you did not have, or you have opportunities that you did not have 6 months ago, a year ago. And some people that look at this, there are some people that will look at any bad situation, no matter how bad, and will find every reason in the book why they can't do something. And then you'll have people that find the least difficult situation and still find an excuse. And the magic are the people that look and see the opportunities to help. I'm not saying to do anything unethical. Like the guy that in back east in, Baltimore area, who basically hoarded all of the hand sanitizer. And he, although smart strategically, he was charging $150 an ounce. That's unconscionable, in my opinion, in the middle of a pandemic. I'm not talking about doing that. I'm not talking about making that decision. I'm talking about making a decision that helps people during these moments. That I've said this to many people many times, but here's the interesting thing. People show you their true colors when the chips are down, right? Look at a business. When they make good choices and they've got tons of cash flow and there's no issues, it's easy to be good. And for instance, customer service, this is one of my things. There's never a perfect company, right? Companies make mistakes and people within the company make mistakes. And here's the issue though. What happens then? How do you treat your customer when you make a mistake? Do you blame it on the customer, or do you make the choice that says, I screwed up? How do I fix this, right? Take responsibility in that respect, especially for your company, especially when you're in that position of power. So don't think that people are expecting you to be perfect. But more importantly, make sure that your decisions are based on evidence, right? Not emotion. Should you start a business? I don't know. Is there a market for it? Maybe. Find out. Use some of the things. Use a Google survey, right? Google Forms for free. Literally no money out of pocket. You could send that Google form to all of your friends on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, asking them what they want. Crazy. Don't think because you think it's something that somebody wants that they actually want it. Because that might not be the thing that's important to them. The thing that's important to them could be something completely different. And if you try selling sand at the beach, nobody wants that. Of course you're going to go out of business. No duh. If you try to sell sand at the beach, you're done. But if you sell sunscreen at the beach, you're in business. You're making some money, some serious money. Selling sunscreen at the beach makes sense. Selling sand doesn't. So when you're thinking about whatever it is that you want to build as a business, take a step back and find out what people want. You'll be 100 times more successful by finding out what people want. Don't try to sell people sand when they're at the beach. Don't try to sell them snow when you're in the middle of winter. They want hot cocoa. They want coffee. They want tea. Right? That's what you want to sell somebody. That's when you make your money. And if you look at almost every success story, it's about selling people the things that they want when they want them. People will find amazing ways to spend money on things that they want. Have you ever noticed that? They will rationalize the heck out of buying it because they want it. They want the status, the money, the feeling that it gives them. People are very emotionally driven. People want to either go towards something or avoid something. It's really quite binary. It's either or, it's not both. They want something to happen or they don't want something to happen. Think of the sunscreen example. Somebody's out there, they're sitting there and they got their kids in the car and they forgot all about sunscreen. And they get all the way to the beach and they forgot the sunscreen. And their kids are crying and they want to go to the beach. And mama's like, sorry, little Susie, we can't go to the beach. Mommy forgot. It happens. It's natural. So in that moment, that mother wants to satisfy her kid by going to the beach, by spending a day watching them play in the sand, enjoying playing with the waves crashing around them, enjoying some time in the sun. But she can't, in good conscience, subject her kid to getting sunburned to the point that he or she is a lobster. That's just, people start throwing around child abuse and neglect when you do stuff like that. So you're at the beach and you're like, hey, I've got these extra tubes of sunscreen. And there's mommy over there with little Susie that wants to stay, but she can't. Oh, look, I've got sunscreen for her. And you know what? She'd probably pay $20 because then she wouldn't have to go find the Walmart. Even at Walmart, it's $10. You bought it. You thought it was a great idea. There you go. You just doubled your money. That's magic. Selling to somebody that wants something. So that's another good point to bring up. How do you know what they want? Ask. You're not omniscient. You're a business owner. You're a human being just like they are. Use your Google Forms. Use Google. You can even use Google Ads. Find out which person is clicking on what ads. You might have a target demographic that you can do. I recommend having someone help you set it up. But for very little money, you could do market research that used to cost thousands. People literally put polls in the field that will cost thousands. So you could start with your free resource of Google Forms to all your friends, all right? Narrow it down to an idea, and then take that idea and then use a couple $100 and find out what sells. Very easy. So you've got your demographics over here with Google Forms. You got your questions, you've got the problems that you think you want to have solved, but now you take it to the next step and you pay for a couple $100 worth of Google Ads to those same demographics to see what resonates with them. And then when you see what does resonate, what hits that key in there, the dog whistle, I like to call it, right? If you can find your marketing dog whistle, the thing that only speaks to your target market, right? Your target market is going to be where your magic is. If you're selling Lamborghinis to somebody or as a dealership, your market isn't somebody that can't afford it. You want somebody that can spend money on it. So you wouldn't market to people that can't afford your services. You're wasting your money if you try to over-market or if you try to blanket market. That's the biggest mistake I see a lot of entrepreneurs making. What if they know somebody? Guess what? That's not the way you market to those people. You want to market to build those types of relationships. That's an entirely different marketing point. But if you're trying to do a point-to-point, think advertisement in the newspaper, old school, right? You don't want to try to market the same way as you would trying building relationships. I build relationships as an attorney. I work with people one-on-one. I get to know them fairly well. And but it's a different type of market. You use the Google Ads to find out what speaks to your ideal client and then run with that bad boy. I can't emphasize this enough. Find out who wants to buy your product. If nobody wants to buy your product, don't sell it. Don't try. Don't go on a hope and a dream that it'll work. You don't have the money to do that. Apple, for instance, they're one of the few companies that they tried to market, especially when they were beginning. Steve Jobs was notorious for telling you what you wanted instead of you telling him what he wanted. And he had a knack for that, but we're not all Steve Jobs. So don't try. I'm not saying don't try to be innovative. Absolutely, be innovative. He came around when BlackBerry was the number one smart selling phone in the world. And BlackBerry was hardware driven. And where they failed was they didn't realize that people wanted to deal with software driven phones. It just made way more sense from an upgradability standpoint, from an accessory standpoint, from so many different things that Apple did. And BlackBerry just said, nope, just think about Blockbuster. Same thing. They made the same mistakes. Look at what doesn't work. And part of it is trying to hold on to what isn't working. Blockbuster found that out. Rim, who's the maker of BlackBerry, found that out. The hard way, the expensive way, the painful way. Because they stuck to their ego. Your ego has absolutely no business in business. Sorry, I didn't realize that sounded funny. Your ego is what will cause you to go broke. Your ego is your thing that will make you make bad choices. So when you make a mistake because of your ego or because for whatever reason that you're thinking, whatever happens, right? Your CFO makes a boo-boo and over-reports on the earnings and you make the decisions based on those. How do you fix it? What do you do? I want to conclude today with this thought of fail fast, but keep moving forward. Fail forward, really, is what it comes down to. Because I guarantee you that the faster you fail, the faster you'll succeed. Thomas Edison said, I didn't fail 1,000 times. I found 1,000 ways it didn't work. And so by using Google Forms, you can fail for free. That's pretty awesome, actually, if you think about it. Using Google Forms and maybe a few $100 in Google Ads, you can fail pretty cheap, as opposed to investing $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 into something to find out nobody wants it. So failing for free and failing quickly, you put a survey out there, you get several hundred responses, and you find out that, hey, maybe that product that you were going to offer doesn't work. Yeah, you failed a little bit, and that sucks. I'm not going to say that it doesn't. Failure sucks. It hurts. But what I'm not saying is you fail, you keep going. You put in another survey. You do another Google Forms. Because it was free, right? Then when you find out what's happening, what's successful, what's good, then you sink your money into that. You can 10x your life by putting that 10 grand into something that guarantees you an investment and guarantees you an income. Versus when you get emotionally involved with what you're trying to do, I'm not saying not to have emotions. I'm simply saying that when you, it's what's called the sunk cost fallacy. Look it up. The simple version of it is that you think because you've already spent $10,000 on something that you should spend $10,000 more on something because it might work. And almost every company, everyone is used to doing that. In for a dime, in for a dollar is one of the mantras that goes with that sunk cost fallacy. It's a terrible way to run a business. It fails, stop doing it. If it works, do it more. When you're bigger and you can afford to take those risks, you can afford to take those risks. But when you're small, don't take risks unnecessarily. Take risks that are calculated. It's a calculated risk. If you've eliminated things by Google Form and by Google Ads, it's a calculated risk that you're going to be successful if you get an awesome click-through rate on Google Ads. That is a calculated risk. An uncalculated risk is, oh, I really want to start a business and it's a really great idea, but I don't know if anybody wants it. That's an uncalculated risk, and that's a terrible risk. I'm not saying the product won't be good. I'm not saying that you can't use that product. I'm not saying it won't be successful, but it's an uncalculated risk. If you look at stock analysts, if you look at business analysts, if you look at the most successful people in the world, they don't take unnecessary risk. They take calculated risks. They study those companies. They know them better than the owners know them a lot of times. And they'll see when things ebb and flow. And they'll make decisions based on that. You need to become obsessed about your numbers, about what's successful and what's not. Because if you just do a shot in the dark and hope for the best, then you're going to end up regretting it long term. I guarantee it. You're going to spend money that you don't have on things that you don't need in order to obtain an ROI that you won't appreciate. We're going to end today's episode with the final thoughts. Fail faster. Fail forward. Don't be afraid of failure.